Coming up on Fronteras, the North American Free Trade Agreement ushered NADBANK, an agency that funds infrastructure projects in communities on both sides of the U.S.-Mexico border.
With the purpose of helping both governments to have a tool to protect, preserve, and enhance the environment and the quality of life.
Coming up, an effort to bring basic services to the border region. And Joe Arpaio is running for his sixth term as sheriff of Arizona's Maricopa County, and he's raised more money than just about anybody, ever.
Any candidate on any critique of the sheriff is going to evaluate what good their BB gun can do when a $4.2 million cannon can come back the other way.
A look at how Arpaio has changed over his 20-year term and how he's campaigning for re-election in November. But first, the news. This is Fronteras, a journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras was created via an unprecedented multimedia collaboration among seven public radio stations and funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting as part of its Local Journalism Center initiative. I'm Crystal Chavez. 20 years, $8 million. That's how long it's been since Joe Arpaio was first elected sheriff of Maricopa County in Arizona, and how much money he's raised so far for this year's campaign. From Phoenix, Nick Blumberg looks at the strong emotions he generates, what's changed over the years, and how Arpaio campaigns for an office he's held for nearly two decades.
One Sunday over the summer, there were two very different demonstrations in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
What would Jesus do about Arpaio? Arpaio's the devil!
Didi Garcia Blaze, founder of the Tequila Party organization, led a small, loud group of protesters outside the Catholic Church of the Ascension, attended by Maricopa County Sheriff Joe Arpaio and his wife, Ava. Garcia Blaze wants the Catholic Church to denounce Arpaio and deny him communion.
Don't go to our churches and come to our town and protest in front of our church.
Gary Lavov organized a counter-protest a short drive away. A fierce Arpaio supporter, Lavov, and a group of Joe fans are standing on the sidewalk asking like-minded drivers-by to honk. And honk they do.
The sheriff gets good reaction everywhere in the world. That's why he gets reelected by a landslide each and every time that he runs.
Well, not exactly. Over the years, Arpaio's margin of victory has gotten increasingly smaller. In 2000, he won 66% of the vote. Combined, his challengers won 33%. Compare that to 2008. Arpaio, 55%, his Democratic opponent, 44%. And a poll earlier this year found the lowest ever favorability rating for the sheriff. That's encouraging to Arpaio's Democratic opponent this November, former Phoenix Police Sergeant Paul Penzone. But there's also an independent candidate who's causing some heartburn at the prospect of splitting the anti-Joe vote. Arpaio was first elected in 1992 and initially said he'd only serve one term. Now he's in line to become the longest-serving sheriff in county history. For years, Arpaio was known for green bologna, pink boxers, Tent City. He was a hardliner, but not on illegal immigration.
This is Sheriff Joe Arpaio. If you drink and drive, we got room for you here. Don't. If you do, expect the max.
In the new millennium and with a new ally in County Attorney Andy Thomas, the sheriff's stance changed. Illegal immigration became a major focus of the MCSO, and Arpaio became the face of a movement.
Joe has become known intergalactically.
Tom Barrup has known Joe Arpaio since before he ran for sheriff. He was a top aide when Arpaio first took office and later ran against him.
It was my goal to make him a household word as Sheriff Joe. We accomplished that. The problem is that I think a lot of that went too far.
But having Sheriff Joe as a household word doesn't bother Jason Rose, a conservative PR and campaign guru who's previously worked for Arpaio's reelection and remains a big supporter. A Joe Arpaio bobblehead sits on a table in his airy, sun-filled office.
We criticize elected officials a lot for being inaccessible and hiding behind PR people and letting other people speak for them. That will never be said of the sheriff. He is probably the most accessible elected official we'll ever come across.
Actually, Arpaio declined to be interviewed for this story, perhaps not surprising based on this 2008 commercial with the sheriff brandishing a copy of the Arizona Republic.
You know, it's true. You can never believe everything you read. So, when these are delivered to your house, they belong in the trash.
To his credit, he does put the newspaper in a recycling bin. Rose says when he met Arpaio, he'd never seen a candidate who could generate as much enthusiasm, negative or positive, and that translates to
what must be a world record for fundraising. No sheriff, I can't imagine America has come anywhere close. You know, money is the mother's milk in politics, and he certainly got a lot of it.
Rose says money and the sheriff's unique appeal have helped Arpaio successfully fend off challengers over the years. But a huge portion of his donors are outside of the state. Here in Arizona, November still promises to be a fight. That's the aim of people like Randy Paras, president of Citizens for a Better Arizona.
He's doing bio ads. Here you have a politician on our poll. He had 100% name ID doing bio ads.
It's time you met the real Joe Arpaio. Joe Arpaio. A lifetime of service, a man of his convictions.
In other words, he is scared of who he's become. So he's doing these things. He's trying to. It's too little, too late. I think he's going to get hit hard. He's going down. It's going to be good to watch.
But Jason Rose doesn't think Arpaio's foes should be so confident.
Any candidate on any critique of the sheriff is going to evaluate what good their BB gun can do when a $4.2 million cannon can come back the other way.
So Arpaio can spend millions on an ad campaign shifting the focus away from catching undocumented immigrants to catching deadbeat parents, and Paras and his volunteers will hit the street trying to get thousands of people to vote early against Arpaio. If his opponent's polls are to be believed, it's the closest re-election Arpaio's ever faced. He's been slammed over uninvestigated sex crimes, misspent taxpayer money, a birther investigation, and court cases over discrimination against Latinos. But even if he loses in November, Maricopa County's 80-year-old top lawman will still be known intergalactically. In Phoenix, I'm Nick Blumberg.
The North American Free Trade Agreement forever changed U.S.-Mexican trade relations. Less known is that NAFTA also spurred an effort by both countries to tackle environmental and infrastructure concerns in the border region. For that, they created the North American Development Bank, or NADBANK. In this fourth part in our series on NAFTA, Fronteras correspondent Hernan Rosenberg takes a look at the work of NADBANK in one border city.
Abraham Hernandez sweeps dirt and litter from the curb outside his house in La Nueva Era neighborhood of Nuevo Laredo, Mexico, across the Rio Grande from Laredo, Texas. 2 decades ago, when he first settled here, he says, he wouldn't even stand on this spot. The former dirt road would kick up nasty dust during dry weather and turn into a mud pit when it rained, Hernandez says. Either way, it made living here miserable. One wouldn't think that asphalt, of all things, would drastically change the quality of life here. Yet Hernandez and other neighbors say that's precisely what happened. That's Blanca Velasquez, owner of a mini-mart nearby. The new streets and sidewalks not only made her job easier, but gave residents here a psychological boost, Velasquez says, a sense of pride about where they live. The improvement project, which paved 55 street miles 2 years ago, was conducted by Nuevo Laredo's Public Works Department, but the city didn't pay for it. The money came from NADBANK, which is jointly funded by the U.S. and Mexico.
The bank was created with the purpose of helping both governments to have a tool to protect, preserve, and enhance the environment and the quality of life of border communities.
That's Jerónimo Gutierrez, NADBANK's director. Since it was created in 1994, the bank has invested $1.2 billion in 155 projects on both sides of the border, Gutierrez says. Most target basic services, from street paving to sewer systems. And thanks to new sewage plants, Gutierrez says now 85% of raw water is treated, compared to 27% pre-NAFTA. 3 elderly men sit on a rickety bench listening to the radio in a neighborhood named 150th Anniversary after the city's birthday. One of them, Adonis Mercado, was one of the first to buy a chunk of what was then a dirt lot 12 years ago. He had no basic services. He slowly gets up and with his cane points to the spot.
Nos alumbrábamos con una pila de carro.
He used a car battery to kick up electricity and bought water from a truck that came by every 3 days. But that was just for bathing and cleaning. NADBAG funding brought in drinking water and other services. Today, neighborhood streets are still not paved, but there's been a drastic improvement, Mercado says. One of the latest efforts by the bank is to provide more training for city workers. Over the last 4 months, it has organized a series of workshops for water treatment operators in 8 Mexican border cities. At a plant in Nuevo Laredo earlier this month, the bank brought in expert Roberto Parras from Monterrey Institute of Technology.
They deal daily with the problem, but they need this knowledge to build up their confidence to manage better the process.
That's plant manager Juan Perez. He's thankful for the seminar, saying his workers need the additional training, but he can't afford it. NADBANK has been good to Nuevo Laredo. 4 completed projects worth $111 million, and 2 new ones pumping in an additional $40 million. Still, there are critics, even of these seemingly good works.
What has changed in 20 years? Not much. It's gotten worse.
Rubén Solís co-founded the Southwest Workers Union in San Antonio. He led protests against NAFTA during its creation in the early 1990s. The treaty was signed in San Antonio, where NADBANK is still headquartered. Solís says bank projects are more about helping businesses thrive than helping the poor survive.
That whole plan of modernizing the border, which is what we had intended, has not materialized at all.
But for many people in Mexican border cities with NADBANK projects, it seems clear that if life is still hard, at least it's not as hard as it used to be. Reporting from Nuevo Laredo, Mexico, I'm Hernan Rosenberg.
There's still more Fronteras coming up. Civil rights advocates claim new voter provisions could deter many Hispanic citizens from voting this fall.
And we're talking about 10 million Latino voters, so that's almost half of the eligible Latino voters in this country live in states that have laws or policies that discriminatorily impact the community.
That's next on Fronteras. Stay tuned. This is Fronteras. I'm Crystal Chavez. A new study says a string of recent state voting laws across the country could keep Latinos from the polls this November. Voter suppression has been a hot topic this election season. An analysis by the civil rights group Advancement Project found these provisions exist in 23 states. Catherine Culleton Gonzalez is senior attorney and director of voter protection at Advancement Project. She told me more about these provisions.
The 3 main types of laws that are policies that have a discriminatory impact are, 1, voter ID laws. 9 states have attempted to require or do require a very strict form of photo ID, as in Texas, where the case has been won, but Texas has tried to enact a voter ID law that has been struck down in court that would require not only a photo, but that it be issued by the government, that it have a current address, and that it not be expired. So all kinds of other identifications that people have, like veterans' IDs and student IDs or other IDs that have always been fine for voting for many years, would no longer be valid in these states. And I wanted to just emphasize that this isn't in place in Texas at the moment, thanks to the good work of MALDEF and a lot of other groups that we've worked in coalition with. We also intervened in a case with the Department of Justice that, and currently that law is not in force in Texas. It's been struck down.
And I know that's in flux because the Attorney General is also looking at different parts of the Voting Rights Act. What are some of the other ones besides voter ID?
The other, you know, really main policy that disparately impacts Latinos is there has recently, very recently, been a wave of states asking for access to federal immigration data to compare their voting rolls, or they've been comparing with their driver's license list. So this year in Florida, we actually just settled a case of discrimination against this new type of purge that has a disparate impact on Latinos. And why? Because it sweeps up many, many naturalized citizens, because people who, you know, many people who used to be immigrants and since registered to vote obviously have naturalized. And in our case in Miami-Dade, of the 562 people who responded to letters saying prove your citizenship, otherwise you may be committing a felony and you can't vote, 98% were naturalized citizens. And Texas and other states have, and Florida have since asked for more access to federal immigration data, or and the federal government has given it over. And we don't know what's going to happen next, to be honest. We know that states like Florida and Colorado are actively running the, it's called the SAVE database. They're actually you know, attempting to clean their voting rolls with the SAVE database at this time. And other states have requested access to it. And so we're very concerned. Texas has requested access to it. And it's completely inappropriate. For one thing, the SAVE database isn't a 100% accurate list of who is a citizen and who's not. But secondly, there is no reason to be checking naturalized citizens. Just because someone used to be an immigrant and since registered to vote, there is no reason to suspect them and no reason to be checking them in this way. So it has a discriminatory impact. The other thing is that the National Voter Registration Act prohibits this kind of purging, it's called, or systemic list maintenance within 90 days of a federal election.
How many voters are we talking about that could be impacted?
Well, we looked again at the laws and policies that have a discriminatory impact on Latinos and how many Latino citizens of voting age live in each of those states that have laws with a discriminatory impact on Latinos. And we're talking about 10 million Latino voters. So that's almost half of the eligible Latino voters in this country live in states that have laws or policies that discriminatorily impact the community. We certainly hope that people get out and vote, that they're not intimidated. One thing our report shows is that the changing demographics of our country and the rising power of the Latino community has led to new forms of voter suppression. There are some same old forms that have always been around in states like Texas and were prohibited and are still prohibited by the 1965 Voting Rights Act, Jim Crow laws like literacy tests and poll taxes. But we believe these new forms are also literacy tests and poll taxes because they have a discriminatory impact, because some people have to go through these hoops and others don't.
Could these new voting rules sway, say, the presidential or other elections one way or the other?
That is the million-dollar question. It's very, very difficult to tell. You know, we're in litigation in Pennsylvania right now, and the lower about their very strict voter ID law, which was enacted in the face of zero instances of voter fraud and may disenfranchise up to 1 million people. And the judge said, until you have proof that people have actually been disenfranchised, in other words, the election passed and, you know, they haven't been able to vote, you're not going to have a really strong case. That got appealed to the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania and remanded back to the lower court. We're expecting a decision October 2nd. We do think that there is an impact on this community, and it could sway the results of the election. We're not doing this for political reasons. We are a nonpartisan group. But if you take a look at the states in which this is happening, you know, many of them are swing states, and many of the people, for example, in Pennsylvania who don't have an ID, the conservative estimate, the state's own estimate, is 750,000 people. And that is more than the margin of victory in 2008 in Pennsylvania.
Catherine Culleton Gonzalez is Senior Attorney and Director of Voter Protection at Advancement Project, which released a report this week saying new voting laws across the country could suppress the Hispanic vote. In the late 1960s, printmaking became a popular means of expression for the Chicano movement. It allowed the emerging Latino artists a way to reach an audience, depict their culture, and voice their protests. Now those prints are highly prized and sought by collectors. An exhibition of prints called Estampas de la Raza is going on display at San Antonio's McNay Museum of Contemporary Art. Texas Public Radio's David Martin Davies has more.
The Estampas de la Raza exhibit includes 60 prints from 50 artists. The bold colors, crisp images, and daring subjects give the print collection an energy, and that was the intention of the artist. They convey powerful messages about identity, politics, culture, history, biography, and art, all delivered with one blow. Over the past decades, the prints were collected by Harriet and Ricardo Romo, and they donated their collection to the McNay.
We decided to give them the 200 pieces with the idea that the community would get a chance to see them. And if the community ought to enjoy them, it doesn't do any good to have them in our closets and under the beds.
Ricardo Romo is the president of the University of Texas at San Antonio. Harriet Romo is a sociology professor at UTSA.
If you look at the pieces that are shown also here from the Gráfica Popular in Mexico, that was the tradition there, that you made multiple pieces accessible to the general public to send a message out. Mm-hmm. And that's why this was very attractive to us.
They began collecting the prints while teaching in Southern California at the height of the Chicano movement in the late 1960s. They saw collecting as a means of supporting the artist. They became involved with Self-Help Graphics and Art, which was the center of Chicano printmaking in East L.A. When they returned to Texas, the Romos continued supporting Latino artists and became patrons of another highly important print shop, Coronado Studio, in Austin. The images in the collection frequently hit on key cultural touchstones of Frida Kahlo, lowriders, the Statue of Liberty, tattoos, Mickey Mouse, and the Virgin of Guadalupe.
Anybody can own a print. Yeah. The first piece we bought, we paid on layaway. And so, you know, you can buy works that you really like and have a collection without being a wealthy person.
Yeah. Oscar Magallanes's print at the McNay exhibit is called And the Boss Laughed. He explains that it's a detail-driven, multi-layered image of two zoot suits sporting skeletons in a knife fight over breadcrumbs.
So it was just the idea of how they were fighting for so little in such a rich country. You know, so that's why I came up with the Fighting for Crumbs in a Bread Factory and kind of different iconic images in the back that represent different things from Uncle Sam to death to the idea of good and evil and how people are demonized.
The Romos say putting the prints on display at the McNay shows that these are works of art and deserve attention from the entire art world.
A lot of the artists have never been shown in a museum, so that was one of the reasons we wanted to show their work.
And at the same time, we felt that it would be a way to help the McNay think about jump-starting their collection and start collecting, you know, more Latino art.
The exhibit Estampas de la Raza is available through January 27th. David Martin Davies, Texas Public Radio News.
You've been listening to Fronteras, a Corporation for Public Broadcasting-funded journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras is a collaboration of public radio stations KJZZ Phoenix, KPBS San Diego, KNAU Flagstaff, KNPR Las Vegas, KRWG Las Cruces, KUAZ Tucson, and KSTX San Antonio. Fronteras is online at fronterasdesk.org. We're also on Facebook. We invite you to join the conversation and post your thoughts about our stories. And for headlines and updates, follow us on Twitter. Our handle is Fronteras Desk. You can also subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Our theme music was composed by Charanga Cakewalk. I'm Texas Public Radio's Crystal Chavez. Thanks for listening.